Welcome to Body Matters Podcast, where we bring to you raw and inspiring content on all things to do with body positivity and eating disorder recovery.
My name's Jessie and I'll be continuing on with the podcast for a little while. But before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as traditional people and traditional owners of this country. We acknowledge with gratitude First Nations communities for their continuing care and connection to the lands or waters with which they have protected for thousands of years. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize that First Nations sovereignty was never ceded.
Lovely to finally meet you. Thank you for coming on the podcast as well.
Yeah.
So let's get right into it, I think. Would you be able to start us off by introducing yourself and maybe provide a little background information about yourself?
So some background information. I used to be a teacher and I guess grew up always knowing that I wanted to work in a helping profession. And, you know, I always thought that teachers had a huge impact on students' mental health, but unfortunately teaching became so data and results driven that it left little room for that. So yeah, I guess I became a little bit disenchanted with that, and a few things happened in my life, and yeah, I've ended up studying and then becoming a psychologist, and yeah, and I'm loving where I am right now.
I really think with the school system, it is, you know, you're monitoring and building relationship with kids. It's very much about just the content, and kids have lives and different learning styles.
Yeah.
It can be quite problematic.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Especially with the changes with COVID now as well, you know, It's only made the gap bigger.
Hopefully there's some change, you know.
Fingers crossed.
So each week on the podcast, we like to ask our guests about a challenge that they've recently experienced and how they have managed to overcome it.
Yeah, so I guess at the beginning of the year, I had a bit of a health scare. And so one of the challenges for me was fear of the unknown, you know, what was going to happen. But more importantly, it was stepping away from clinical work while I recovered. You know, I felt a lot of guilt, I guess, that I may have a negative effect on some of my clients. And so I kind of overcame the fear, first of all, fear of the unknown, by fully understanding what was going on, doing the research, potential outcomes, because I kind of have that knowledge is power way of thinking, and that's helped me in the past. But in terms of work, I was supported by my own psychologist and supervisor and came to the understanding that this was something that was out of my control, and that I needed to be functioning at my best to be able to truly support the amazing humans that I'm lucky enough to work with. And I mean, throw in some self-care there, and that was a pretty perfect recipe.
I think that definitely shows that you're human as well, and those things do happen. And fear of the unknown is one of the major things. It is pretty hard for people to come to terms with.
Yeah, that's right.
So how can eating disorders impact areas in our life such as athletic performance, academic performance, and job performance?
Yeah, so in terms of athletic performance, I guess that's a little bit different because there are a lot of physical impacts there. So, you know, muscle loss, increased risk of injury due to bone health, and lacking concentration and exhaustion, you know, they can lead to big injuries as well. There's also the hormonal and metabolic changes that would normally maximize performance, and then, you know, that's lacking. But in all aspects, in academic, job performance, and athletic performance, we've got the comorbid anxiety and depressive symptoms. We've got the brain fog, which leads to, I guess, lower performance and inability to maintain the standards that you may have had before. There's constant thoughts about food, body, shape, which leads to inability to focus, and also just irritability, general irritability as well. There's lots more, but, you know, that's just a few of the big ones.
Yeah, definitely being able to concentrate would be quite hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how can an eating disorder maybe lead to lost friendships, relationships, and social isolation?
So we know that, I guess, eating disorders, a lot of people feel ashamed or guilty having them, and eating disorders need isolation to maintain those behaviors. Eating disorders can be really sneaky in that respect, and the more isolation they cause, the more they result in relationship fractures. It becomes increasingly difficult to eat around others due to, you know, the food rules and the rigidity. And within families, there can often be fights around food, a lot of blame, guilt from parents and sufferers as well. And in all relationships, I guess there is that notion that eating disorders are a choice and that someone just needs to eat and everything will be fine. And that can create a lot of conflict as well, because, you know, we know differently.
Yeah. And why is that not true then?
Well, it's a mental health illness, isn't it? You know, it's not, definitely not a choice. It's something that is created in the perfect storm, I guess, you know, biologically, environmentally. Yeah, so much goes into the creation and the maintenance of an eating disorder that it's about as far from a choice as possible.
Even trauma as well, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Foster that maintenance. And, but we do know that it's not okay. So how is social isolation going against the needs for connection, belonging, intimacy?
So human needs theory, you know, that states that humans we're biologically wired to have certain needs met to ensure that we're appropriately developing in the physical sense, the psychological sense, and the emotional sense. And one of these needs is attachment. And so that includes, you know, what you're speaking about, relationships, friends, intimacy, and that includes both emotional and sexual intimacy, and creates that sense of belonging, I guess. But when we isolate ourselves, our attachment needs or sense of belonging aren't met in an adaptive way. So we have to seek fulfillment or validation elsewhere. So, for example, basing our evaluation of self on weight or shape rather than the validation experienced in healthy social connection and belongingness. And this can mean that validation is derived from the notion that I'm good, I'm worthy if I lose weight, versus I'm bad, I'm worthless if I gain weight, rather than the types of relationships that we're in and the worthiness we get from that.
And we do know that's not why you are friends with someone. People aren't valued based on their...
That's right.
So how can conflict as a result of an eating disorder affect our ability to socially engage?
So, conflict over food choices and food rules can lead to an avoidance of those social situations where we might experience that, or where food will be involved. And, you know, once that happens, there's that slippery slope, and it's followed by all social situations where there might even be just a potential for food to be involved. And eating disorders and the rules and rigidity that they entail becomes more important than maintaining those healthy social connections.
Even though it can become quite harmful and detrimental to your health as well. So what are the negative social effects of people who encourage eating disorder behaviors?
There are small pockets of society now that are anti-diet, anti-thin ideal, anti-weight bias, and social justice informed as well, but that's yet to filter through to the community. And sometimes it's 100% accepted and even celebrated when people lose weight through unhealthy behaviours. And unfortunately, with people who have eating disorders, regardless of body size, but especially in people who have larger bodies, it reinforces that they're a better person, they're more valued, they're more worthy of attention when they lose weight, because they get all of these comments about how wonderful they look. And that leads to the thought of it's a bad thing to gain weight, which, you know, starts that cycle of increasing eating disorder behaviours to get back to where they felt worthy, where they felt like they were valued. And I guess this leads to people suffering with their eating disorder in silence and isolating themselves even more, not reaching out for help. And again, this is so much more of a struggle for people in larger bodies, especially when it's people in the medical profession who are encouraging and celebrating the weight loss. Yeah, and so that can be really difficult.
Mm.
Yeah.
So how might having another family member with an eating disorder impact our relationship with food and exercise?
I guess it's really similar to what we were just speaking about, but including now that lack of familial support and the behaviour is really normalised. There are those learned behaviours, and I guess if someone else in your family has an eating disorder and they don't realise they have an eating disorder or they don't want to believe it, then I guess you can also be invalidated and there's no recognition that you need treatment.
Yeah, and they might be constantly reinforcing those beliefs that are actually harming you. So what are the benefits then of maybe peer support for eating disorders?
I guess so in that case, there's that non-judgmental aspect and acceptance of somebody for who they are, even if they're different from you, don't agree with you, or on a different recovery pathway. And that's something that in the last question, you know, you wouldn't have, that person didn't get. It was a very judgmental environment. But I guess in the peer support environment, it can provide that sense of belonging that we were talking about earlier and the ability to be vulnerable, which may not otherwise be occurring in their lives. But there's also that important social aspect. You know, if someone with an eating disorder has withdrawn from all societal contact, it might be an easier step out of isolation with peers who have had similar experiences, because there is that common ground and understanding. And, you know, that's a place where we can develop using eye contact again and conversation and practicing those really important skills that we need to function in social settings and also provide distraction and shared emotion regulation.
Mm. And you can also learn those things together. Like, you might not be so comfortable, just take it step by step.
That's right, yeah.
So how can being vulnerable and communicating your lived experiences create meaningful connection?
The shared experience is grounded in already being connected. You know, you come into that situation knowing that you have this commonality by having a similar, although incredibly varied experience with an eating disorder. You know, no one eating disorder is the same. But the supportive group structure and that sense of solidarity allows for the opportunity to develop meaningful relationships with others and trusting that you'll be valued for something other than your weight and shape.
Mm, definitely. So how can deeper connections help us heal from trauma?
Trauma, I guess, often leads to hypervigilance and that sense of danger due to bodies being in constant fight or flight mode. And eating disorders help us to cope with this. I mean, that sense of danger comes from or in the form of food and fat. And we're all wired for connection, though. And connection provides us with the ability to co-regulate and create a shared sense of safety from both the eating disorder, so the food and fat side of things, but also from the trauma, regardless of where that trauma comes from. Because we know that trauma makes co-regulation really dangerous and interrupts the development of self-regulatory skills. But we also know that co-regulation within a positive, healthy relationship invites that sense of belonging that might be missing and that feeling of safety and groundedness in the world that we often lose when we're affected by trauma. And we know that this doesn't happen straight away. These new relationship patterns develop slowly over time, but allow for the human need for safe connections to begin developing, I guess.
It can also demonstrate like healthy relationships as well if you rely on maybe an unsafe relationship.
But yeah.
Then create more so healthier ones, and then you might start to feel more like valuable from other things.
Yeah, yeah. And initially you may not have known any other way.
Yeah.
So stepping outside of that and connecting with people who have other, I guess, frameworks allows you to see a different way to connect and to be in the world.
And a lot of people actually do have a healthy view of the world, you know, it's definitely there for it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So how can people start to build healthy connections with people?
I guess the first step is that openness to possibility. You know, sometimes we go through life and we don't want to change. Like, we don't feel like we need to change the way we connect with people. So that openness is one of the first things, as well as recognizing that some of the behaviors and patterns that have held us back in the past need to change as well. But also, it's really important that we understand the nonverbal aspects of connection and communication, because often in those toxic relationships, it is quite verbal and it can be loud and scary and shouting. But in healthy relationships, we know that only 7% of meaning, feeling, and connectedness is communicated through the spoken word, whereas 38% is through tone of voice and 55% through body language. So that, I think, is a really important aspect of understanding how to start building healthy connections and being able to look for that kind of nonverbal connectedness, I guess.
Yeah, just having that known safety and comfortability for people. I definitely see that. So what about then maybe toxic positivity? How could we maybe avoid toxic positivity to not invalidate other people's emotions?
Yeah, well, I guess toxic positivity is exactly that, the invalidation of a person's experience and emotions. And it tells that person that their interpretation is wrong and can create that feeling of, I must be doing the wrong thing, or, you know, there's something wrong with me. And positive thinking isn't a fix-all. The idea of it could be worse, or I should be grateful for this, or look on the bright side, isn't helpful, because suffering is suffering. It's all relative to the situation. You know, it sucks and it deserves to be validated for its suckiness, not invalidated with someone always has it worse. But I guess three things that can help to validate in that situation is to listen, to not compare to your own experiences, and empathize. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, it definitely is. So how might having healthy social connections be a protective factor in preventing someone from developing an eating disorder, for example, having shared meals?
So I guess in terms of having those shared meals, just the role modeling of a healthy relationship with food, body, and exercise by a safe attachment figure, I guess, whether that be a carer or a friend or a partner, it allows a person to see what that looks like, but also creates the environment where it's not only okay, but it's safe and accepted to have a healthy relationship with food, body, and exercise. And it becomes the norm, not the exception. So having those safe, healthy social connections builds that non-judgmental environment where we can, I guess, we can see what it looks like to have a healthy relationship with food, body, and exercise.
Yeah, and it can start to maybe normalize it, and you start to feel more comfortable seeing other people model it as well.
Yeah, and I guess it doesn't really have to start in childhood either. Like, it doesn't have to be our parents. It could be friends or our own adult families as we grow. It can be in midlife. You know, there's always a time for that role modeling.
Yeah, definitely. So could you then tell us a little bit about Body Matters Meal Support Program?
Yeah, so I think it's a really exciting initiative, and the idea was, I guess, to create an inclusive, mindful, compassionate space where people in the eating disorder can come together to engage in mealtime assistance and be in a supportive environment, trauma-informed environment, and an accessible environment, because some people are socially isolated, not by choice, but by distance. And we also wanted to fill the gap in the treatment step-down process. So, you know, giving the opportunities for those moving from inpatient to outpatient setting to continue their step towards recovery and having that support of a community. So with people that are isolated, so like in rural remote regions who would otherwise be unable to access treatment if they went from inpatient, perhaps in Sydney, back to where they were from, having this online support community would be really helpful, I think. And having that group support allows encouragement to attempt fear foods and support with other food-based barriers that they might have experienced to recovery.
Yeah, I think it's a great bridge and a great step towards recovering and just kind of starting the journey.
Yeah, and it's all about developing the self-regulation tools first of all to manage the fear and distress, and in doing that, learning that as a group, they can then provide that for each other, and also at the end debrief about the distress, and then there's that recognition that, oh, I'm not the only one that stresses this much about eating or has worries about what will happen if I eat. There are however many other people in this group who are experiencing the same thing.
So then how can someone who has a lived experience of having an eating disorder assist someone with overcoming certain challenges within their own eating disorder?
I guess discussion and verbal support helps, as well as tips and examples about how they may have overcome a similar challenge. But we know that this is a small part of the experience, and, you know, that's that 7%, whereas tone of the verbal support is more important than the words. Having a warm, non-judgmental and understanding tone, which can be role modeled by the clinician in these support groups, you know, we're able to express a lot with our tone. And often when others are distressed or our brain and body isn't able to rationalize what's happening, you know, we're just stuck in that fight or flight, whereas tone can soothe. And there's other forms of body language or nonverbal communication that can be utilized over telehealth, you know, such as eye contact, having an open posture, having calm facial expressions, that allows for safety and co-regulation. And that idea, I guess, of just sitting in the suck together, you know, we're all in this position. I understand where you are. I understand that we're experiencing it probably differently, but we're here together. We have some solidarity and we've got safety, and we're all here fighting against the eating disorders, our own and everyone's in the group.
And how can a group environment help people express and release emotions in a comfortable way?
That idea of validation of the shared and individual experiences, knowing that when they release their emotions, they have someone else in their corner who's perhaps going through or have gone through a similar experience, that's helpful in and of itself for people to be able to express and release those emotions.
So how can peer support members be mindful about not sharing harmful eating disorder behaviors with each other?
I think it's really important, whether it's one-on-one or in a group setting, that there are very clear safety boundaries determined at the beginning of any peer support or, you know, group therapy situation. So, for example, one of the safety measures that we have in our meal support program is that we don't discuss, there are certain topics that we don't touch. So, for example, weight, eating disorder behaviors, food morality, judgment, portion sizes, past treatments, calories, triggering events, you know, there's a lot of things there. But even topics like politics, religion, stigmatizing words, all of that can help to create a safer environment. And you want people to feel welcome. You want it to be an open space, and keeping things light and social is also helpful.
So how can support, encouragement, and a sense of hope benefit someone who's struggling with an eating disorder?
Sometimes we need others to hold the hope for us for a little while, and we can only begin to take that hope back when we receive support and encouragement, especially when we can see how others in a similar situation can benefit from the same things. I guess it breeds believability even, and releases that unicorn mentality, you know, that I must be the only one who feels this way, and because of that, I can't recover. What's okay for someone else isn't okay for me. Yeah, and I think just through learning that, we are able to take that hope back for ourselves.
Wow, no, I really love that. So how can being a part of a community geared towards healing help people take on new empowering roles amongst each other?
So I guess community leads to a sense of belonging. Belonging leads to that sense of safety and solidarity within a group. And this group or community is then able to use their experience to, like I said before, hold the hope for others, whilst also showing them what it can be like to live a life according to their values and fulfill their needs in ways that aren't maladaptive or relying on an eating disorder.
Yeah, and you start to build up that worth into something else.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how can partaking in social activities and engaging positively with social interactions improve someone's quality of life?
So isolation breeds isolation, but it can be hard to engage in social situations if we don't feel safe. So once safety is established, like is the aim in these groups, people can begin to explore connections again. And with these positive social interactions, we can develop a positive sense of self that's unrelated to weight and shape. And that alone can improve quality of life. But not only that, it opens up a world full of opportunities and the chance to discover exactly what it is that provides fulfillment for them. And then I guess the potential is limitless.
Yeah, no, wow. You said it perfectly. I just want to say thank you so much. It's just, you've gone above and beyond with everything.
But thank you for having me. It's been a great experience.
Well, that's the end of today's episode. Please subscribe, leave us a comment or a review. If you would also like to learn more about Body Matters services, you can check out our website at bodymatters.com.au. Thanks for listening.